Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CoronNation.com, hosted by JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. I'm Greg Mahochko, and joining me from CoronNation this week to talk about Nebraska ball, that's Nebraska men's basketball, is Patrick Gerhardt. Patrick, welcome back to the show, buddy.
Good to be back, Greg. How you been, man?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Good. Busy week, busy weekend, but yeah, no. Good to go, ready to talk about some Nebraska ball.
And we're going to apologize in advance. If we get cut off midstream, it is Sunday night. Almost said Saturday. Sunday night. We're having some connection issues on both ends. Usually I can just blame it on my end, but Patrick's been kind enough to fall on that sword as well and blame his connection. So it had been a really nice run for the Huskers. I say had. I don't want to sound past tense as in all hope is lost. But you go on the road to Champaign to beat an underwhelming Illinois or to play an underwhelming Illinois team. You don't get the job done, but that doesn't. I don't think that takes the bloom off the rose of what Nebraska's done over the last couple of weeks, winning six in a row. They've got a couple of regular season games left and an opportunity yet to, be in that two by, bracket or two by tier in the Big Ten tournament. What's been your impression of the Huskers these last few weeks?
Huskers have been doing really well. As they have been kind of all year. They started out rough, but as we talked about in the past, they've been progressing as the year's gone on. A lot of teams, they might progress for a while and then regress, but I think as a whole, Nebraska basketball has done well. This past six-game run's been great. The last few games have, of course, been against lesser teams, but, every run comes to an end, and it came to a run 72-66 against Illinois in Champaign. Illinois, yeah, they're the bottom of the Big Ten. They'll either end the year at the bottom of the Big Ten or next to them with Rutgers. But Champaign is a tough place to play. That fan base was fired up. I think they had a no-sit Sunday situation, if I remember right. The team was ready to go. Tim Miles even said after the game that the Huskers had some bad practices leading up to this game, and it definitely showed through tonight. Not ideal, but as we'll talk to you about later on in this podcast, the Huskers can get through it. It's not the end of the world. If you're a casual Nebraska fan, which if you follow me on Twitter, I kind of put jabs on earlier tonight. If you're a casual Nebraska fan, this really is not the end of the world, at least not the end of the season.
The State Farm Center used to be Assembly Hall, of course, there in Champaign. They redid it. They actually turned the court 90 degrees in their remodeling. But I've taken in an Illinois-Nebraska game there several years ago, and it was on a weeknight, and the fans were still upbeat. And that would have been the year. What year did they make it to the tournament under Tim Miles?
14.
And did Pettaway return the year after that? Would that have been the what I know?
Yeah,
that,
he came back. He
okay,
came back.
So it must have been the year after that with Pettaway, Pitchford, and those and that crew. A couple years back. So I've seen these two teams play in that arena. Illinois fans, yeah, they haven't had a whole lot of to cheer about, but you definitely had the feeling that this is one they definitely didn't want to lose. They only lost, at Nebraska by a point or two on a JPJ three at the end. Excuse me. So, for whatever reason, it almost seems like when you go back a few weeks and you talk about Nebraska's 20-point win over Michigan. You know, they played it and they beat Minnesota, which was a top 15 team at the time. They've beaten Wisconsin. It almost seems like this is a Nebraska team that plays to the level of their competition, because they did struggle a little bit on the road today, and in that loss they didn't play Rutgers super clean. They didn't play Maryland super clean in those wins. It's just, you know, they it almost is in a way that mirrors the football team, but they do seem to just play down to the competition. Credit them. When I first turned the game on, they were down by 7 late in the first half, and they came back and had a big lead in the second half. They just couldn't close it out. Illinois came to play today.
No, they totally did. And I mean, Nebraska, they kind of have that problem. You are correct, where they almost play down to their opponent's level, but they also, and this has plagued them from since the beginning of this year, they start slow. And it's almost like they get their droughts and stuff like that out early. And then second quarter comes, they make the proper adjustments, and then the second half of second part of the second half, they really come out strong. And, you know, they came out strong first part of the second half, but it just didn't sustain through the second half. If anything, things got more frustrating for them as the end of the game went on, which is kind of the opposite of what's normally happened this year. You know, look at the last game against Maryland. They came out second half, made the adjustments, and, you know, they just put things away. You know, it started out rough, but, yeah, it's just it's adjustments. It's some adjustments just didn't have the proper effect they should have in today's game. And that's, you know, not looking down on Illinois. Illinois is not the best team, but they're not, you know, absolutely terrible. There is some decent talent, which was shown on the court today. But it's still a loss that hurts.
And a lot of size that Illinois had that Nebraska had some trouble matching up with, even with, you know, our biggest guy, Jordy Chimanga, who, you know, was in there, you know, so, but just seemed maybe a step slower than some of these, you know, more veteran Illinois big men.
Oh, no, most definitely. I mean, Jordy, he has the ability to struggle against a lot of players. If he's not comfortable under the basket, you will see him playing a little bit more erratic, a little bit more fouls, and he won't transition well. If you take him out of his game, he will suffer, and the team will suffer in that aspect too. And Illinois took full advantage of that today.
I want to talk about two players. One who, coming into the season, you know, we had some really high expectations for, and probably put a lot of pressure on himself, and then hasn't really maybe met those expectations. And then another who maybe, you know, coming in as a transfer, we didn't know what to expect, and now he's, you know, if he were probably on any other team in the Big Ten, you know, they'd actually be talking, you know, Big Ten Player of the Year type of stuff if he was on a more contending team. But Glenn Watson Jr. Is the first one. He's the former player there I've mentioned. He'd been playing, his career has been so well, and was really hoping that, you know, he would continue to, you know, see progress. But I would almost, would you say, think it's safe to say that we've seen a little regression from Watson this year?
A little regression, and also when you brought on Copeland and Palmer, you brought on two major scorers who took probably a lot of the pressure off of Watson.
Okay.
Watson could come down the court, do his thing as a point guard, and he might have kind of rested on that maybe a little more than need be. And as the season's gone on, Copeland and Palmer have come out as our major scorers, and Watson maybe not as transitioned well because of that. I think that has a lot to do with it, whereas last year, Watson, you know, he was our number two guy all the way through, and he knew his place, and he knew how to progress through a game. And I think my guess is that it's a lot of that, at least on the leadership end, has been jumbled and probably lost early on in the season, and he's not been able to recover since then, if that makes sense.
No, it does. In watching the closing minutes of that Illini game on Sunday, he comes down, has an opportunity to, I think Nebraska's down by 3, And anybody who watched the game probably knows exactly the possession I'm talking about. He's over, you know, just right side of the top of the arc and just tosses up a three. Kind of looked a little rushed, a little off balance, and could have set the team up for a better shot there. But I understand his probably mentality is, man, I could really come out looking like the hero if this goes in. And there wasn't really anybody around him. So, I understand that, but... You know, when you're down by three and you're trying to, you know, secure or get better standing, you know, for the tournament, you've got to take a higher percentage shot, I would think.
No, I agree. And it's not as if he's having some of the better players on the court guard him. He's gotten some pretty good shots on throughout the year that just have not gone in. Whereas last year, he was probably going up against one of the top players on each team. You know, the talent's there. I don't think he's talent-wise, he's not regressed. I think it comes down to a mental aspect with him for whatever reason. One of the things that'll probably resurface in the offseason before next year, before we really have an understanding of what really happened. So, and that might be a personal thing, you never know.
Sure. And the other player that, I mean, we've mentioned him. Certainly, you've said that his arrival and his addition has taken some of the scoring pressure, some of the offensive pressure off of Glenn Watson Jr., but that's James Palmer Jr., and he was a transfer, much like Isaac Copeland, who has really been a big boost to this Nebraska team, to the point where the BTN commentators, when you watch, you know, Kevin Kugler, who, you know, I enjoy, you know, he's the Nebraska boy, and I'm sure other teams think he's coming off a little homerish. I don't hear it, but you know, I don't you know, hate Joe Buck either. So, you know, whatever. But he, you know, they mention, you know, Player of the Year stuff and all Big Ten. He's done some phenomenal things in helping to keep Nebraska, you know, in the conversation, in the tournament picture, on the bubble, if you will. But is the fact that he plays at Nebraska, and I'm certainly glad he does, but is that a detriment to his, you know, like postseason honors and accolades? Because if he were on a Michigan or a Michigan State or Ohio State or an Indiana, you know, one of the more blue chip, you know, Wisconsin, one of the more blue chip basketball programs, would that benefit him more in the long run?
You know, it possibly could. I mean, like any sport, if you play on a team that's a well-known name, it definitely helps. There are some very good players this year who could very well be up that aren't being mentioned that much either. It's not just Nebraska. You've got Penn State and a couple other teams that's got some players that probably should be mentioned more. But, you know, I think a lot of it, he does well. His numbers are great. They very well could also be looking at the bigger picture on what's he doing for the team as a whole, collectively. How is his leadership? How is he transitioning the ball throughout the game? How is his defense? There's a lot of factors involved that they're probably looking at. He's done well offensively. He's doing okay defensively, and I'm guessing he would probably need to uptick his defense for these guys, in my aspect, or in my belief, for them to really pay much more attention to him for Play of the Year honors.
And it's kind of like, you know, the Heisman or the NFL MVP, MLB MVPs. They tend to pick the best player on the best team, you know, regardless of who might have had either statistically or, you know, the most impact. I mean, it tends to be, you know, the best players on the contending teams. But as I said a moment ago, certainly happy that Palmer is wearing the Husker red. And speaking of wearing the red, you may have an answer to this, you may not, but the last two home games, why weren't we wearing home white? What was up with the black?
My guess is that it was working.
Oh, fair enough. You know, that's simple. The other let's see, the other answer I would have accepted was Black Panther was coming out this past weekend, and something that I, you know, wanted to touch on, it, and now it almost seems too late. It no longer a current event, but, you know, of course, last Saturday they had the home game, and the team wore, and they brought them back for the game in the middle of the week as well, that the hate will never win. So, you know, those were long sleeve black warm up shirts, and then the black uniforms underneath. So I didn't know if there was that more of a social statement, you know, underlying as well. I don't know. That's just me, you know, spitballing, brainstorming. I have no idea. But like you said, it was working. And then they are in the road Reds on Sunday, and they lose to stinking Illinois.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, I think, you know, it could be a part of that, the movement and everything. But, you know, I know historically the players have always liked wearing the black.
Sure.
Unfortunately, up until this year, the black has not worked well for Nebraska. You know, the biggest game I remember, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, they wore black playing Creighton in CenturyLink, and they just got annihilated. And it's games like that where I think they've been historically apprehensive on wearing black, but this year black's been very good to them. So, I mean, unfortunately for the people who believe that, you know, because the school colors are red and scarlet and cream, they should stick to that. I think black's a good color for Nebraska, and it looks good out there.
One more home game, which will be against Penn State, so maybe we'll see a return of the black unis on the road.
Two more home games. We got Indiana on Tuesday and Penn State on Saturday.
See, for whatever reason, I thought Indiana was an away game.
Yeah.
But I'm going to defer to your expertise because you know more than I do.
I know that right off the bat because I had to get rid of my tickets. So,
yeah, and that was the Illinois game. As I mentioned, you know, I'm just a couple hours from Champaign. I was up in Champaign this past fall when the football team was in town, went to that Friday night game. And through the radio station that I used to work at years ago, they are an Illini affiliate, so I was going to hit them up for a pair of tickets, and if they had them, and go with my dad. And I talked to my dad about this, you know, last month. He's like, I don't know what that weekend's going to hold for me. I don't know what the weather's going to be like. So he kind of poo-pooed on my idea, and then I never followed up on it. So I stayed home, watched it as I was cooking dinner. And we all know how the outcome goes. Dinner tasted great. The game, not so much. I want to talk to you a little bit because also I don't know if it's the final Sunday of the regular season, but anyway, the same day that Nebraska lost to Illinois, Ohio State lost to Michigan. And as the commentators are talking, and anybody who's, you know, following the season knows, that actually helps Nebraska, because Nebraska beat Michigan, not just beat them, they beat them pretty soundly a couple weeks ago by 20 points. For people who maybe don't follow basketball as close as you do, and I certainly don't follow it as close as you do, or you know, David, or anybody really, explain the tiers that they have, or you know, I guess that's the right word. Quadrants maybe is another word. Explain how that works, because I think it was in the Maryland game. They said that, you know, if Nebraska beats Maryland, it's a win over a tier three team. But if Maryland beats Nebraska, Nebraska's a tier two team. So if you can explain that a little bit as best or as simply as you can, and maybe help, you know, shine a little light on this gray area for us.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a little confusing, but, you know, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, you know, wins are brought, especially later in the year, within quadrants. And, you know, every top teams are quadrant run, and then I think it goes to the top 50 of them, and then quadrant 2 is like 50 to whatever. And quadrant 3, and I think there might be a quadrant 4. I don't pay too close attention to it this time of the year. I wait until the last second to really pay attention because things can jump in between quite a bit. But because of the Maryland record, they're quadrant 3. So it's not that big of a win for Nebraska, whereas Nebraska is currently sitting in quadrant 2, so it'd be in Maryland. Nebraska beat pretty soundly, and at the end of year, if, you know, Michigan beat Ohio State, and I don't know where
are they going to be tomorrow or where they are right now? I haven't checked, but they could easily be in quadrant one. As of now, Nebraska is 0-6 against quadrant one teams. Now, if Michigan goes up to quadrant one, that could be 1-6, which would greatly help Nebraska out, even with the Illinois loss. Depending on who you talk to, the selection committee, it varies in the So that quadrant factor has been used quite a bit, and I think lower-level teams that have maybe one or two quadrant one wins. Like, let's look at St. John. Nebraska got beat by St. John. And St. John, up until a few weeks ago, had zero wins in the Big East, and then they beat, I think it was Duke. They beat Duke, and then they beat Villanova, correct?
Yeah, I think at one point they, you know,
and Duke's in the ACC, but you know, they knocked off two absurdly top-ranked teams back-to-back, and all of a sudden they're jumping up in the quadrants pretty quick, you know, because they have those. So it's a science. It's not an exact science, and I'm not going to try to go too deep into it right now, because not only is it going to be confusing, but it's also a fraction of what goes into to what determines what happens at the end of the year.
And like you said, there things can change so rapidly just depending on a team's performance, who might pick up a key victory, who might suffer a key loss. So yeah, all that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I mean, Nebraska's best chance obviously is just to keep winning. They had the loss at Penn State last month. That was a very close. Was the one that went into double overtime, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, or one overtime. I mean, it was the last second. Yeah, right. No, it was close. It was close. That was probably one of the more frustrating losses Nebraska had,
and
for sure. But I mean, if you want to talk about end of the year stuff, like I don't start really taking, like I'll probably start taking better tabs on it this week. Because up until now, it's basically just it's fun to look at.
Sure.
But there's so many things happen at the very last second that, you know, you could talk about this stuff for 2-3 weeks leading up to Selection Sunday, and it could just go out the window.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of a couple of years ago when Nebraska did make the tournament, but it was that, you know, bit of a hot streak there towards the Big Ten tourney that helped, I think, escalate them over the hump, over the bubble, and into the tournament. So it's very much just a bit of a wait and see. And obviously Nebraska's got to do their part, and that's just keep winning. And that tone, everybody, indicates that we have lost Patrick. Kind of expected it there towards the end, as you heard. Connection got a little rough. Oh, he's back. Hold on. And welcome back, Patrick.
Where'd you lose me at?
I was just about to sign off. I said, "Oh, we lost Patrick." And, oh wait, he's back. No, so I was saying that it doesn't help very much to watch, you know, the tiers and quadrant talk and everything, because you can use Nebraska as an example a few years ago when they made the tournament, because they got hot right at the very end and had a little winning streak in the Big Ten tournament, and because of that, that helped elevate them into the NCAA tournament. So right now, like you said, it's all kind of irrelevant. There's still a lot of basketball to be played.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a week's worth of basketball, but I mean, you have a week's worth, and then you have the conference tournament. And the thing you got to remember about that, you know, the NCAA tournament bid they got a few years back, they got lucky in a lot of those games. If you look at the statistics at the end of the year, I mean, Nebraska was not a good Big Ten team. They were ranked in the bottom half on a lot of the statistics. I mean, they got through a lot of those wins by the skin of their teeth. And I think I said on this podcast before, that's why they got blown out by Baylor.
Yeah.
And, you know, didn't go anywhere. And as important as it would be for Nebraska to make the NCAA tournament this year, I don't I don't want them to go in just to get in and then get annihilated.
Sure.
You know, it's always nice to have that on the resume, but if Nebraska doesn't make the NCAA tournament this year, they will most likely have a very, very nice ranking, if not one of the top four in the NIT. And if they can make a decent run at the NIT through the NIT, you know, that would, to me, that would be almost just as good as making the tournament, you know. And I think moving on into next year, that could be a catalyst to make the guys even hungrier than they were this year. But I could be wrong.
And it's not what I mean, barring any, you know, absolute collapse, and I don't think there will be a collapse in the next couple of weeks. I don't see Tim Miles going anywhere. I think the way that this team has played has really shown, you know, what he's able to do when he's got the talent, you know, on the bench and in the locker room. So I don't think Tim Miles is necessarily going to be, you know, fired at the end of the season. I actually agree with you. I think it'd be nice to get to the tournament, the NCAA tournament, obviously, and win a game. But like you said, it's not going to do anybody any good for morale, for the psyche, you know, for anything like that, to go in there and lose by 20, 30 points to, you know, a traditional powerhouse. Like you said, maybe if they are one of the, you know, odd men out, so to speak, and sit nice for the NIT, then you have an opportunity to have a pretty successful postseason run there as well. So lots to talk about as Nebraska ball, you know, comes to the regular season comes to a close here. As you mentioned and corrected me on, and I thank you, Indiana and Penn State at home. What needs to be done to come away with some key victories this week?
Indiana is down from normal Indiana, but they've been that way for a while. They got a new coach, but they're not terrible. They're a mid-level Big Ten team this year. I think they're on a four-game winning streak. And, I mean, they've got some players that could cause some problems for Nebraska, but they're definitely beatable. Penn State's been on a bit of a hot streak this, you know, since Big Ten play started, and they've got one of the best point guards in the Big Ten easily. And, you know, they could come in and they could beat us in our own house. They could. It's going to take, you know, I think Nebraska, they should go 2-2 or 2-0 this week. But if they went 1-1, it wouldn't surprise me. 0-2 would surprise me. They'll win at least one of these games this week. And, you know, then we're on to the Big Ten tournament.
As we talked, you know, a few minutes ago, and again, maybe not for the tiers and looking at the NCAA tournament, but certainly the Big Ten tournament, what would be worse for Nebraska, losing to a good Penn State team or losing to a bad, I mean, I guess losing to a bad Indiana team would be worse, but let me pose the question this way. What could move the meter more, losing to Indiana or beating Penn State?
I would say right now beating Penn State.
Okay.
Just because Penn State over the last couple of months has picked up more traction, especially in the press.
Okay.
And, you know, they've whereas Indiana, everybody's kind of almost written them off for this year. If anything, you kind of look at it as their history is kind of weighing them down. but Penn State's got a good team. They really do.
And again, I mean, it's, you know, perfect answer to that question. You know, you go out and beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, and then, you know, surprise the teams that might sit ahead of you a little bit. Nebraska, are they still, as far as, you know, after this loss to Illinois, are they still in that top four with the two game bye, or do they need these wins to get back to that spot?
I think they need to solidify it, especially with Michigan's win the other night. Or tonight against Ohio State, but I think if they go 0-2, I think that four might be gone. I haven't looked that.
Right.
I wasn't prepared to look that deep into it yet, and I haven't had a chance to. But I think they need to win at least one of these. But I could be wrong. So
well, let's go 2-0.
I apologize for my lack of knowledge right now.
Hey, everybody knows you've had a busy weekend, and this is the sad slash funny part of the show, because this is the probably some of the best reception and signal and connection that we've had the whole time, and that's the end of the show. So, Patrick, man, it is late. I'm going to let you get on with the rest of your evening, and I'm going to do the same. I've got to do, you know, all the post-production stuff now. So I'm gonna get out of here, get this show up ready for a Monday morning. Folks, hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you have a great week. Let's cheer on the Huskers to victory, and not just the men's basketball team, the women as well, and wrestling. And I saw a tweet from the
– Baseball had a good weekend. Don't forget baseball.
Baseball went 3-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, with one loss coming to one of those damn California schools that have been playing in the warm weather for 4 months already.
But they beat them too, so.
Okay, so they split that one. It was two games with Washington State and then two games with this other team, right?
And UC Riverside, I think, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say Riverdale, and I'm like, no, Archie's not pitching. For anyway, all right, yeah. So and softball is in doing well. I'm pretty sure. Also, we'll have to,
per usual.
Yeah, yeah. They know what they're doing. And we'll have some spring sports talk. But it seems too early to talk spring sports. I know that my schedule does not necessarily line up with the collegiate sports schedules. But while we're still talking basketball and wrestling and everything else, it's still odd to jump into baseball and softball season, but we'll get there. And thanks again, Patrick, for joining me on the show. And this is what we do. We'll have another. It's going to be a short week because it's a late release on this one. So we'll get you the next one here Friday or Saturday on the Five Heart Podcast. Reminding you this week and every week, and apparently sometimes twice a week, that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red.
Win the damn game.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.